Good evening. We have a special kind of treat here this evening. Suze and I have put together a ceremony in celebration of people who have passed. And I just want to first check and see if anyone is here for the first time with Seattle Insight. And see if I can offer a proper welcome. So I think everybody here right now has been here before, so that's great. Anyway, so we are going to have a ceremony for loved ones that we've lost, people that we care about that we've lost, that I guess I shouldn't even say lost, that are dead, they're gone. And they've passed on, and we haven't actually lost them. They're just dead. That's pretty much where we're at. So we want to celebrate both their life, who they were, who they are to us, and see how it fits within our practice in the Dhamma. So what we're going to do, we're not going to start this evening the traditional way. We're going to start with a chant that I'm going to talk about in just a moment. And we're going to chant for a little while, and then we'll have a poem that Suze is going to read, and we'll have a silent meditation as usual. It'll be shorter. And then afterwards, Suze and I will both give a talk. Suze will give a talk, like Tim and I do, and then I will give a talk on this remembrance and how to be with the death of someone we really, really care about. And then we're going to take some time, about 15 minutes or so, into breakout rooms where you can just chat about. There is a question that we have, but I will share it closer to the time. Come back, kind of see what happened in the group, what people want to share, what came up for people. And then we'll end with another poem, and that's more like a call and response. Have some sharing of the merit, and I think that's about it. So it's I'm hoping that is this going to be as special to you as I feel. I've been thinking about this all day for the last few days, and it feels very special to me. I've been thinking about my mom, my brother, my sister, and so it feels special. So I hope it's special for you too. So with that being said, I think it's time for us to, do you have anything else, Suze? We should do our chant. All right. Let me tell you a little bit about the chant we're going to do. It's Om Mani Padme Om. And some of you may know the chant itself. There are two word versions. We're going to do what I consider the easier one. But I don't know if you know what Om Mani Padme Om means, or what it stands for, or what it is that we're chanting when we chant it. We say it. It's very common. But what it stands for is why I think it's perfect for a ceremony like tonight. It means that we're giving praise, or we're paying homage to, it's called the jewel within the lotus. And the jewel within the lotus is the being of compassion. So, Avalokiteshvara is one way. Kuan Yin is another way to think about it. It's the being that hears the cries of the world. And Avalokiteshvara was a man who was on his way, the bodhisattva, on his way to get enlightened. But he couldn't do it because he kept hearing pain. He kept feeling and hearing the suffering of the world. And he got overwhelmed with just the pain of the world, and he couldn't fix everything, that he burst into, like the Humpty Dumpty burst apart. And it's said that one of the Buddhas put him back together again, and when he put him back together again, put him back together as Kuan Yin, and gave Kuan Yin this large heart and many arms and many ears and many eyes and many capacities to be able to be with pain. That suffering is not just something we need to get rid of, but suffering is something that we need to learn how to be with, hold, get insight from, understand, and get intimate and up close with. And so there are many versions of Kuan Yin. The one I like is the royal ease, where she's very relaxed, sitting on a lotus, and then at any moment she can get up and go help wherever she's needed. There's another one where she has many arms and many eyes and many ears and heads, and it's a little weird looking, but she's representing that she can hear pain wherever. So in addition to just the fact that we're giving homage to the being of Kuan Yin, Avalokiteshvara, His Holiness the 14th Dalai Lama is considered the reincarnation of Avalokiteshvara. So even His Holiness, it's not just that we're giving, saying homage to these beings that hold the world in compassion, but there's another way that you could look at Om Mani Padme Hum. So Om is the universal word for, it's like universal energy. It's like the sound of the universe. It's just out there. It's just the sound of the universe, that resonance. And then Mani is for the purification of our conduct, for the purification of our thoughts, and for the purification of our minds, our hearts. So Mani Padme is all purifying our hearts and minds. And then the word of Hum, H-U-M at the end, the Hum is a, or a Om. It's not Om, it's Om. It sounds almost like you're saying the same thing, but it's Hum or something like that. It represents the wisdom to be able to be with all of this purification. So what we're really saying is we're sending out into the universe this desire to purify both the heart and the mind towards kindness, towards care, and towards a more unified mind and still, and so that we can gain the wisdom from that. So we're going to just sing this. You'll get it. It's one line. It's Om Mani Padme Hum. I'll type it in the chat so you know exactly what we're saying in case you've never heard it before. It's Om. That's what we're saying. And we're going to say it a few rounds. Sue's asked me, when was I going to stop? And I'm like, I don't know. It's a felt sense experience. When it feels like it's getting boring to me, to us, then it might be, I can't say we'll do it three times, but we'll just feel into it. Won't be too long, but it'll probably be a little bit longer than you think. All right? So you can just listen, or you can sing along with me, chant along with me, once you get the rhythm going. I'm going to turn off this fan. Om Mani Padme Hum. Padme Om. Om Mani 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 Padme Om. Mani Padme Om. Mani Padme Om. Om 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 Mani Padme Om. Mani Padme Om. Om Mani Padme Om. Mani Padme Om. Mani Padme Om. Om 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 Mani Padme Mani Padme Om. Om Mani Padme Om. Mani Padme Om. Om Mani Padme Om. Om Mani Padme Om. Om
May the energies of Avalokiteshvara, of Kuan Yin, of the jewel within the lotus, come and stay with us throughout this entire ceremony. May it lift our spirits and keep us safe together.
I'd also like to welcome everyone. And Ken is going to put up a poem that I'm going to read, but you can also read along with it. And then we'll have, at the end of reading the poem, I will ring the bell once to start and then three times at the end. This poem was written in the 12th century. We're not exactly sure who is the current translator. 'Tis a fearful thing to love what death can touch. A fearful thing to love, to hope, to dream, to be. To be and oh, to lose. A thing for fools, this, and a holy thing to love. For your life has lived in me. Your laugh once lifted me. Your word was gift to me. To remember this brings a painful joy. 'Tis a human thing, love, a holy thing, to love what death has touched. So tonight is the first ever Seattle Insight Ceremony of Remembrance, and it's fitting that this is the last week of our month on death and dying. It's been such a rich Dharma month, teachings and perspectives and suggestions on how to practice. And so tonight we have an evening of remembrance of those we loved. The poet Halevi says, 'tis a fearful thing to love what death can touch. Fearful and human and holy and joyful. And when we're in that place of love, we feel that this is just what we are meant to do. To love and to be loved. To care for another being so fully that their well-being is paramount in our thoughts and hearts. And out of this love grows such a desire to spend more time with that person. Out of this love comes the natural arising of attachment. It's such paradox, this love business, you know. Attachment is present. Even when you have maybe an explicit agreement that the other person's happiness is what you support, even if that means that that person's going to go find that happiness somewhere else. It's still paradox, you know, holding our loved ones close and knowing that the holding won't last. So when this person, these people in our lives that we remember tonight, when they die, there's such sadness, such a hole left in our lives and in our hearts. I recently started reading Norman Fisher's most recent book. It's called When You Greet Me, I Bow. And in it, he talks about the Buddha's last moments and what happened with the monastics who were with him when he died. It's in the Mahaparinibbana Sutta. And in that sutta, they discuss the contrast between the monastics who tore their hair, raised their arms, threw themselves on the ground in grief, and then those who received the Buddha's passing with equanimity. And here's how Norman describes it in his book. He said, the sutta seems to imply disapproval of the former and approval of the latter. But he says perhaps that disapproval is just in our reading. Both sets of monastics are to be approved. Impermanence is not only to be overcome and conquered, it is also to be lived and appreciated. It reflects our human nature. The weeping and wailing the monastics were expressing not only their attachments, but also their immersion in this human life and their love for someone they revered. Norman goes on to share some of his own experiences with the death of loved ones. He says, while I may not tear my hair and throw myself down in grieving, I have experienced extreme sadness and loss, feeling the whole world weeping in the dark with fresh absence of someone I love. At the same time, I have felt such appreciation and equanimity because loss, searing as it is also beautiful, sad and beautiful. My tears, my sadness are beautiful because they are the consequence of love. And my grieving makes me love the world and life all the more. Every loss I have ever experienced, every personal and emotional teaching of impermanence that life has been kind enough to give me has deepened my ability to love. I so appreciate that last line. Every personal and emotional teaching of impermanence that life has been kind enough to offer me has deepened my ability to love. And isn't this the truth of things? I remember when Bill died, I felt so much closer to his oldest friend and then my friend, Michael. Michael died in this December, and now I feel so close to his wife, Randy. I remember when my sister died, and it brought me closer to her daughter. It is such a privilege to love and be loved. For me, death and grief offer the most immediate experience of equanimity, that the heart deeply feeling the gift of love, and at the same time, deeply feeling the pain of the loss of the being for whom we felt so much caring. Every time we open to love, we risk that loss. But what a wonderful risk that we take over and over again in our lives. Yesterday during the Sunday Sits meditation, Lauren asked the question, how does your heart hold the unwanted? I think it's a good question for tonight. How does your heart hold this paradox, this both and of love and loss? You know, the poet says it's a fearful thing to love what death can touch. But then he also says it's a holy thing, a joyful thing, a human thing. We don't seek to avoid loss, even if we could. We settle into it with some depth and appreciation, and it's the truth of being human. We connect, we care, and the caring grows. There's separation and loss, and then more caring. You know, we've all heard the teachings of the three characteristics, and we learn about impermanence. All conditioned things are impermanent. They arise and pass away. We, the 41 of us here tonight, and all of our loved ones, are impermanent. Here today, gone, we don't know when. You know, and then that realization of the instability and dissatisfaction of trying to hold on to things, we know all about this, and we know it's not personal. And because we learned about the three characteristics, we started to practice. And in our practice, we recognize the true nature of life, to see and experience and embody life moment to moment. As Tiwari said in her talk yesterday on Sunday, to find the contentment and the joy of being here in this moment, being right here, right now, when we feel so alive. And when we're fortunate enough to feel aliveness and that strong inner connection with another being, that sense of aliveness becomes even more palpable, that shared presence. And it's the gift of our practice that gives us the gift of equanimity, of holding both that loss and love. And we try having kind of a light grip on whatever is happening in the moment, even though sometimes the grip may be a little bit tighter. And that's true, of course, with our relationships with those that we love. Remembrance and grieving is quite a process that changes and transforms all of us over time. Each of us here this evening may be in different places in that process. For some of you, it may be very fresh. Others, long time ago. It may include different ways of saying goodbye. Memorial services, sharing stories, getting together with people and just laughing and crying and telling about who the person was and how she or he lived. In my circle, we've told so many stories about Bill, his tons of collections, his seriousness and his total inability to get jokes, and his amazing generosity. When my best friend Barb died some years ago, five of us gathered about an hour after she passed, and we washed her body and applied oils and lotions and chanted and recited poems. We were saying, have a good journey in our own way, even though we had no idea what that journey really was going to be. A month after Bill died, nine of us took his body out 12 miles into the Pacific and offered his body to the fish. Just as he wanted, we wished him a good journey. And as the ones who are still living here and perhaps sometimes feeling a little left behind, those early days after a death can feel so disoriented. I know I felt kind of wacky. I wasn't able to keep track of things. I was acting in ways kind of unfamiliar and a bit unnerving. But then at some point, those wacky feelings, what starts to arise is a deep feeling of gratitude, the gift of this person in our lives. A dear friend of mine, whose husband died some years before Bill, whenever she and I are together, one of us will bring up and remark, aren't we two of the lucky ones? Because we were partnered with such wonderful men. And depending on the specific of the relationship that you had with your person or persons, we may need to do some form of forgiveness. I'm really fortunate that the last morning before Bill died, our interaction was just lovely. There was some teasing, some sweetness, an overall sense of tenderness. But that's not always the case. Every relationship lives on a continuum. And we could have just as easily parted with a snarky tone as that tender tone. And so if the last moment when you were together with your loved one, maybe it was a difficult moment, doing some kind of forgiveness practice might be really useful to help soften some of that pain of regret. As time has passed, and at least for me, the sweet memories continue to linger in the foreground, way surpassing any of the negative ones. Sometimes people wear the familiar clothing of their loved one. I know I've really incorporated Bill's sense of generosity and have tried to live my life with more generosity than there was in the past. I've also included a lot of his ethical understanding and how I run the business that we did together. No matter where you are in this journey of remembrance, sharing it with others, like tonight, or within your own circles of friendship and family, really can help us stay connected with the kind of lawful nature of life, that all of us are of the nature to die and there's no way to escape that. There's a sense of such healing to share this sense of love and loss together in the Sangha. Over the years, I've been a part of this Sangha from the very beginning, and we've lost some really beautiful people, and I feel them when we gather together. So that sharing in Sangha can be really tender and supportive. Returning to the theme I started with in my talk about loving another person and knowing that that person will die. It's fearful, it's foolish, it's holy, it's human, and it's a great source of joy. I'll end with another quote from Norman Fisher. He says, "To feel the scourge of impermanence and loss, and to appreciate it at the same time profoundly as the beautiful essence of what it means to be at all. This is the truth I hear reverberating in the Buddha's last words. Everything vanishes, practice goes on. And we go on, we practice, we connect with each other, we allow our hearts to be touched, we offer love, and we receive love." Thank you.
Oh, that was so beautiful, Suze. Because practicing in Dhamma really enriches love in a whole new way. That's what I think you were pointing to. There's a way in which, as practitioners, we learn to experience love in ways we never thought we would understand love to be that way. And oftentimes, in order to get to that love that Suze was so beautifully talking about, we have to be willing to go through some of the difficulty. And I think I want to talk a little bit about the difficulty. It's part of both the mystery and the nature of practice, this practice we're on. Buddha said in the when he was describing the path, he said that of all the paths that one could take, the Eightfold Path is the best path. Of all the truths, the Four Noble Truths is the best truth. And of all the things, passionlessness is the best in seeing the nature of things. So it's not that it's the best. It's the best for seeing the nature of things. He said it is the only path, but there is no other, for the purification of insight. It is the path for the purification of insight. I think sometimes people want to use this path as the path to relaxation. But it's not really the path for relaxation. You might get some relaxation, but this path is for the purification of insight. And remembering that is what gives us the greatest amount of peace, no matter what arises. He said, walking upon this path, you will make an end of suffering, having discovered how to pull out the thorn of lust. I have made known this path. You yourselves must strive. The Buddhas only point the way. Those meditative ones who tread the path are released from the bonds of Mara. All conditioned things are impermanent. When one sees this with wisdom, one turns away from suffering. This is the path to purification. All conditioned things are unsatisfactory. When one sees this with wisdom, one turns away from suffering. This is the path for purification. All things are non-self. When one sees this with wisdom, one turns away from suffering. This is the path for purification. The Buddha has said in countless ways, forward and backwards and around and underneath, and I mean just almost every teaching he gives, he points to one thing. This is the path of purification. And when I think about this idea of the path of purification, it doesn't get any clearer than when we start talking about death, when we start talking about impermanence. Because I don't know how your month has been, but I could see that you may have come across many, many, many thoughts of regrets and pain and difficulty around this idea of death and impermanence. Because the idea of death and impermanence is supposed to bring up the places where we have difficulty, where there's suffering, where there's some degree of contraction. It is for the purification of this. I remember one time Rodney shared a story with me. I'm not going to share the story. It's his story. It's private for him. But he shared the story about a time when he did something that he wished he hadn't done. And it had a permanency, it had a lasting impact on someone. And he said that he would feel the regret of that, as Suze was pointing, that her and Bill's last morning could have been tension. It could have been difficulty. Some of the main relationships that we have the most attachment to, we have the most pain when they're gone. It's so palpable. Or when they're sick and ailing and going to be gone, there's a way that the ending of something brings with it a lot of pain. And so there's a part of us that might want to think that pain shouldn't be here. It should be easier. I'm a practitioner. It should be softer. But what Rodney taught me in that story, because I was facing my own moment of having done something, and I had come face to face with this realization of something I had done, and I couldn't take it back because the person was gone. I couldn't take it back what I had done, and I just couldn't. I didn't know how I was going to now live with this new wisdom. I kind of like buried it throughout my whole life. And then when they were gone, it came up. And now I had to live with this. And Rodney was helping me understand something I've never forgot. He said that the reason why, well, he didn't say, I don't know what he said, but what he pointed to was the reason why I was experiencing so much pain is because I could see the thorn in my heart. I could see what I couldn't see before. That is such an important thing to begin to understand. We cannot practice with death and impermanence and open our eyes and then not want any of the pain of seeing our ignorance from before. That's what I was seeing. And what he was pointing to was not to get trapped in the ignorance of before and instead stay in the present moment wisdom that has brought you to this place of seeing. Can you see that? That's what this death and impermanence is about. We're cultivating the capacity to see. And what we're going to see, though, is a lot of our ignorance and a lot of our harm and a lot of the things that we wish we couldn't see or hadn't done because we have a greater wisdom. We have greater insight. Our task on the path is to stay in the present with the insight and the wisdom and not get trapped in the past where there was ignorance. So he kept pulling me back into the present moment, and I kept going back, telling them about what I did, and he kept pulling me back into the present moment. And then I got it. I said, oh, I see in the present moment, I have access to the level of love that Suze is pointing to because I am not wrapped in the ignorance of just causing harm. It was such a, I mean, I came into the interview. I know you guys have seen this. You come in all dejected. It's terrible. It's the worst ever. But then when you leave, having talked to this teacher, your heart, your spirit, everything is uplifted because you're back actually in the present. That's what he did. Brought me back here to this moment where my wisdom and my insight was steadily growing. What this points to is that when we do these practices and we're practicing with everyday things, death being one of the most everyday thing with us, our task is not to keep from feeling any pain of the death and that has gone before us or somehow buck up, take it on, be okay with it. The past is to actually get intimate with that pain, with that regret, with that missing, the loss, the grief. We get intimate with it so we can see, oh, this is wisdom. I can see now what I couldn't see before. And then the last piece is this. When we come to this place where we are wrapped in this pain of what we had done, the way that Rodney helped me come to this aha moment was him saying, now, in this present moment, forgive yourself for what you did when you were ignorant. In this present moment with wisdom, we can forgive anybody. We can look at people who have changed their lives and have redone things, and we see them and we're like, oh yes, I can see you what you have done. But we never want to forgive ourselves for what we did in ignorance. So we have access to this love that Suze was pointing to when we are willing, in our wisdom, in our insight, in this present moment, when we can see, oh, that was harmful. We can see that. We forgive ourselves. The forgiveness is not for them, for someone who hurt us, or it's for us to be able to continue to move forward this onward leading path. Something I want to leave you with, Bhikkhu Bodhi wrote in an article about the purification of mind. He said Buddhist teaching, in the Buddhist teachings, the main point is the genuine enlightenment. Of genuine enlightenment lies precisely in purity of mind. The purpose of all insight and enlightened understanding is to liberate the mind from the defilements. And Nibbana itself, the goal of the teaching, is defined quite clearly as freedom from greed, hatred, and delusion. So what he's pointing to is all our practices, even this practice around the death of someone close to us or the ending of things, is to begin to see how to abstain from harm, from evil, how to cultivate goodness, kindness, and how to purify one's mind. That's it. That's what every single experience we have is designed on this path to help us do that. And when we keep our path focused in that narrow framework, then you can see that no matter what happens, every single moment in life is a gift given to us for practice towards this purification of mind, this awakening. And I think when we awaken, we have the love that Suze was talking about. It comes naturally, it comes easy. Find love in all kinds of places. So I think that's where I'm going to leave this. So maybe we'll just sit a second here. Just so fortunate to have stumbled upon this path. And we're not held captive by life's experiences. Alrighty then. So Suze.
So we're going to have some time in breakout groups. And I don't know how many of you received and read the email that Cheryl sends out encouraging you if you wanted to bring a picture or two with you and where you're sitting of your loved ones. So Ken is going to break us into groups of probably three. I see that a few people are leaving.
Yeah.
Thank you for joining us. It's fine for you to go for the, we'll wait a couple minutes or to just see what the number comes up to. So Ken can break us out into groups. The question that Tiwary and I would like you to talk about is that now that your world is empty of the person that or persons that you're remembering, how does that knowledge of this loss and impermanence affect you as your life continues? How is this knowledge and experience of loss, how's it affecting you as you're going forward? And as always in small groups, we practice deep listening, trying not to be spend too much time rehearsing, but just really listening to each other, sharing from the heart, and not giving advice. Sure that each person has plenty of time. So I think about 15 minutes should be plenty. And just as Ken's doing that, when we're done, we'll come back for large group, sharing what happened, any questions, anything you want to bring up. And then we have a call and response remembrance poem at the end.
So let's see if anybody wants to share a comment about, it could be about the ceremony or how you're doing or whatever is alive for you right now.
So Suze, what was that was attacking your Buddha?
Oh, that was attacking her Buddha?
Yes.
Yeah, that was a mask. I wondered what that was. I'm like, what kind of statue is that?
You know, we have masks everywhere, right?
Oh, okay.
So I put this little mask on the Buddha. So he's okay. So the Buddha shouldn't get COVID.
I thought it was a woman hanging on him.
I'm sorry. To where he asked me. So I didn't even know that I had that. Because it's such a pretty Buddha.
Yes,
without the mask. Sorry, David.
It usually looked the way it looked today.
All right, let's see if anybody have anything they want to share. How was the ceremony? Was it good? Do you feel nourished and connected? And that's beautiful. That's beautiful. Yes, we need to do this, don't we?
Yes, I think it should do this. First Daniel.
Yes, me too. Yeah, David.
Yeah, this is great. So I really appreciate it. Both of your talks were really good, and I like the whole spirit of it. It was excellent. I think there was something with the how you wove in the forgiveness story that really, really super landed. And I think I'm realizing that I was I'm going to try and remember this. I mean, I think it was like pretty good if I can remember it. Like one of those things where like, you know, things can become feeling so permanent and it's resistance. Like, it's like, I don't want it to have been like that, but I'm still like, even though like, I know I can see, I saw something. It's like, oh, that's great. Some insight, you know, perspective, but then there's still like this whole big thing that's like kind of firm and, a lot of just resistance to that and, you know, whatever, all the stuff, but like, I think there is something about even forgiving yourself for, sometimes when people are gone, like you can't yet to your point, like we can only forgive ourselves. But I just wanted to say that, like, I can hardly even say it, but like I'm just going to say like that was good. It landed and I appreciate it.
So. Yeah, you're welcome. Yeah, we forget sometimes that the forgiveness does not go back to the time when the harm happened. Forgiveness happens right here, right now, in this moment, when we have wisdom and insight and capacity. Let's see here. Hold on, I'm going to pull up the participants so I can see who goes first. Jean?
Yeah, I thought both of your talks were really wonderful. And what you said about forgiveness, I also found quite helpful. Just recognizing that we might have some wisdom now that we didn't have before.
Yep.
You said it in a way, I mean, I always know that, well, I did the best I could then, you know, but this is, you put it in a sort of deeper perspective. So thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome.
The other thing I wanted to say, this came up in my little group. We were just a group of two. I've done some grief rituals works. Mm-hmm. And there are there's a couple people on Bainbridge who lead them regularly in an online thing. It's about 3 hours. So if you think this is okay, I thought I would put my email in the chat. And if anybody's interested, you could email me and I will send you the details about this.
Yeah, I think so.
Okay.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Is it Shawnee or Bruce? Which one is it?
It's Bruce.
It's Bruce.
Yeah. There was a point in my life where I would have never said this, but Death Month has been absolutely wonderful. It's like it's been so deep and intimate. And yesterday I was actually sad that Death Month was going to die. Oh no, we can't talk about death anymore.
That's right.
Honestly, it'll be in my face for the rest of my life, but
it will.
This has been really, really enriching. Thank you so much.
That I, you know, Bruce, I'm so glad you said that, because it does have, I was worried that we would come into this month like it's a looming negativity, but it's not. It should bring us alive in this moment because the truth of it is so real that we can actually enjoy. We can't avoid it, so we can stop all the trying to avoid it and just enjoy the aliveness of this moment. So yeah. Thank you very much.
Yeah, and part of it was the teaching you gave about the deathless.
The deathless, yes.
Something opened up in me that I had basically figured death will come and that's it.
Yeah. Well, that's
instead of by the heaven thing or any that kind of stuff.
Yes. And
when you talked to me about that, there was a crack.
Yes, good, beautiful. That's so beautiful.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Let's see here. Kelly?
Hello. So first, I just wanted to say I'm really grateful that you put this together. It came at a really meaningful time for me personally. And so I'm really appreciative that you decided to put together this first annual one. I am dealing with a very recent and I know all very recent loss, and I know all loss is difficult and tragic in its own way. But my younger sister, who is 23, passed away just a few weeks ago, very suddenly, with no indications beforehand. And that's a really difficult situation, obviously, to be in. And I don't know if this is because it's so recent or related to kind of the circumstances of the loss, or just related to my perspective, but I was really struggling with some of the things that you were both saying about kind of acceptance and kind of creating meaning and learning, I guess, from the experience. Mm-hmm. Because to me, in my current experience, this feels completely random and tragic and is causing so much pain for so many people. And I can see in some ways, like, where there's the opportunity for a lot of love to come up in all of this, and how, my life is going to be really different now. And in some ways, that's not all going to be bad necessarily. But it's also really hard to know that there are things to learn and that I can accept this and still feel like it's completely unfair.
Yeah.
And like there's no way it's ever going to be okay that it happened. I was just wondering if you had any thoughts kind of on that, or any words for someone who is very, is very fresh for me right now.
One, I'm glad that you mentioned it, because it's a very different world when someone first dies. When my mother first died, she also died unexpectedly and out of the blue. She just had a heart attack at a bus stop. And it was striking right before Christmas. It was striking. It's not, it's sort of like what I think what Suze and I are pointing to is that this grief you're feeling, this sadness, this unfairness, this pain, all of it is important that you feel it, that you accept it, that you allow it, and that you don't treat it like somehow or another as a practitioner, I shouldn't be feeling this way. That you just embrace the reality of it, because we are attached to people and we do feel it as a loss when they're gone. At the same time, there is a gift that practice offers, because your sister's death actually shows you the truth of your own death. And so there's a way in which you're staying with practice and not tumbling over into, I'm not going to do any of it, then that's what helps you kind of ride the wave of the pain until you get to the contentment and the joy. You don't necessarily get to the contentment and joy in the beginning. But when I think about my mother now, mostly I'm laughing at stuff she did. But when I thought about her when she died, I could barely breathe. So there's a way in which time in and of itself allows us to have a greater access to the experience itself. And you're not there because it's too new. But I can see how my willingness to stay going to Sims, stay with practice, stay with meditation, even though my mind was consumed with Mama every time I would close my eyes, something about the practice itself allowed me to access a level of wisdom. And I know I've told people, but the moment it happened, I was on my way to Sims and I was walking down the street and I just happened to stop at this light looking at all these ants walking, doing some path, going somewhere. And I looked at them and I had this moment of realization that all of those ants had mamas and all of their mamas died. And that every ant afterwards, mother was going to die. And worms and people, and some mothers had died before mine, and some mothers will die after mine. But that all beings have mothers, and their mothers will die. And in that moment, it was not so crushing on me. And it became this moment when I understood it was universal. It is the nature of us to die. And I could be with this because this was just a badge that as a human being we all go through. And so all I'm saying is it's not, you're not necessarily there and you don't have to make yourself get there. You just hold the grief, be intimate with it, allow it to be, and practice and practice and practice and practice. And that somehow between the practice and your acceptance of the pain of this, understanding comes. That's what you're doing. You're just practicing with understanding. You see? So no rushing. Some days will be good. Some days not so good. Many people on this call here have lost people recently that I know of. Not recent, but have lost people within our Sangha. And so we've all kind of held that pain of that loss over time. And as time goes on, it does get better. It seems kind of random to say that now because, you know, people said that to me and I'm like, it's not going to get any better. But it did. I mean, I rarely think of Mama in sadness. I always think of funny things that she did. And it's a completely different relationship. So we just have to learn to be with it. And that's what practice is all about. Okay?
Good. Tawari, if I may add just one thing to Kelly. It may turn out like Tawari was saying, where for her now, when her mom comes up in her mind, there's joy and funny and all that. For me, it's not exactly that way. There are times when it is, but then there are times, even that's almost 4 years since Bill died, that the pain and the loss seems almost like it was when he first died. But it doesn't last. So all I wanted to share is that grief has a way, I believe, of just running its course in the way it's going to run its course. And what Tawari was saying, allow it to be what it's being and experiencing it. And I also wanted to say, I'm really sorry that your sister died.
Yeah. I'm glad you're with Tim, though. I'm glad you're not alone with your sister dying. Let's see here. Kathy?
I just wanted to thank you both for a very moving and meaningful night. And Suze, I wondered if you could tell us where we could look up the poem that you read.
If you go on Google, tis a fearful thing, and the last name is Halevi. Ken, when he did it, he found different translations, and this guy was from the 12th century. But tis a fearful thing, and the last name Halevi should come up.
Great, thank you.
Yeah, you betcha.
All right, we'll see if anyone has anything else. If not, I think we could call it a night.
Well, we're going to do our little call and response.
Oh, that's right.
As an ending. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and Mary.
So, I'm going to just tell you a bit about this. Kaddish is the word that we Jews use for a prayer that is said at every single time we get together. But this is not the translation of the Hebrew Kaddish. It is something that these two rabbis put together. And what I'd like to suggest is I will read them out loud and read it to yourself, perhaps first bringing into your own minds and hearts the names and images of the people who have been close to you. And then I'll turn it back to Tawary for just a closing dedication of merit. Okay. At the rising of the sun and at its going down, we remember them. At the blowing of the wind and in the chill of winter, we remember them. At the opening of the buds and in the rebirth of spring, we remember them. At the shining of the sun and in the warmth of summer, we remember them. At the rustling of the leaves and in the beauty of autumn, we remember them. At the beginning of the year and at its end, we remember them. As long as we live, they too will live, for they are a part of us as we remember them. When we are weary and in need of strength, we will remember them. When we are lost and sick at heart, we remember them. When we have joy we crave to share, we remember them. When we have decisions that are difficult to make, we remember them. When we have achievements that are based on theirs, we remember them. As long as we live, they too will live, for they are a part of us as we remember them.
So, I'm going to share the merit of this practice. Some people put their hands together when they're sharing merit. I don't, but you can. I just try to sit, get quiet, and access the fluidity, the energy, this sense of goodwill, kindness, and benefit that the practice brings. I just try to feel the benefit of whatever arose in me in this practice this evening. So whatever beneficial energy that came from our meditation, our talks in Dhamma, our conversations and contemplations with each other, we could keep that benefit to ourselves. But instead,
We'd like to share this benefit with the whole world. So may all those who are feeling the loss of someone they care about, especially Kelly and her family and all the friends, the death of her sister being so close here, but also all the people who have lost people to COVID within the last year, such a shocking kind of loss. Some families have lost quite a few people due to one disease. And for all the people that have died in senseless gun violence, and just people who have died of old age, it's just our natural causes, illnesses that have come too far. Finally, the body could no longer fight off the illnesses. For people who have died from overdoses or from suicide, there's so many deaths and so many ways in which death lives with us. So our practice here, the beneficial energy we generate here, it may not seem like much for the amount of pain, but it's like we're not Avalokiteshvara. We are Kuan Yin. We have this capacity to hear the cries of the world and to send this good energy, this beneficial energy out into the world. And may it seep into cracks and crevices and be a light in dark places and be a foundation when people are weary to lift them up. May it bring joy and peace and a sense of not being alone to all beings, all families who are suffering from the loss of someone who's passed on, for all those beings who are in that transition. May this also support their transition. And may it support our continued practice on the path, that we never stray, that we never falter, and that we always hold each other up and remember. Together, we can go far. May all beings be happy. May they be peaceful. And may they live with joy and ease of well-being.